Frames of Mind: The Theory of Multiple Intelligences. Author: Howard Gardner. Part 1: What is an intelligence? My review of earlier studies of intelligence and cognition has suggested the existence of different intellectual strengths or competencies, each of which may have its own developmental history. Before moving on to the intellectual competencies themselves, we must consider two topics. 1. What are the prerequisites for an intelligence? 2. What are the actual criteria by which we can judge whether a candidate competence? Prerequisites of an intelligence. The prerequisites are a way of ensuring that a human intelligence must be genuinely useful and important, at least in certain cultural settings. This criterion alone may disqualify certain capacities that, on other grounds, would meet the criteria that I'm about to set. For instance, the ability to recognize faces is a capacity that seems to be relatively autonomous and to be represented in a specific area of the human nervous system. Moreover, it exhibits its own developmental history. Yet, to my knowledge, while severe difficulties in recognizing faces might pose embarrassment for some individuals, this ability does not seem highly valued by cultures. Criteria of an intelligence. Following are the 8 signs of an intelligence on which I rely in an effort to nominate a set of intelligences which seems general and genuinely useful. Number 1. Potential isolation by brain damage. To the extent that a particular faculty can be destroyed or spared in isolation as a result of brain damage, its relative autonomy from other human faculties seems likely. The consequences of such brain injury may well constitute the single most instructive line of evidence regarding those distinctive abilities or computations that lie at the core of a human intelligence. Number 2. The existence of exceptional individuals. In the case of the prodigy, we encounter an individual who is extremely precocious in one, or occasionally more than one, area of human competence. In the case of the idiot savant, and other retarded or exceptional individuals, including autistic children, we behold the unique sparing of one particular human ability against the background of mediocre or highly retarded human performances in other domains. The existence of these populations allows us to observe the human intelligence in relative isolation to the extent that the condition of the prodigy or the idiot savant can be linked to genetic factors or to specific neural regions. Number 3. An identifiable core operation or set of operations. I define a human intelligence as a neural mechanism or a computational system which is genetically programmed to be activated or triggered by certain kinds of internally or externally presented information. Examples would include sensitivity to pitch relations as one core of musical intelligence, or the ability to imitate movement by others as one core of bodily intelligence. Given this definition, it becomes crucial to be able to identify these core operations. Number 4. A distinctive developmental history. An intelligence should have an identifiable developmental history, through which normal as well as gifted individuals pass in the course of ontogeny. To be sure, the intelligence will not develop in isolation, except in an unusual person, and so it becomes necessary to focus on those roles or situations where the intelligence occupies a central place. In addition, it should prove possible to identify disparate levels of expertise in the development of an intelligence, ranging from the universal beginnings, through which every novice passes, to exceeding high levels of competence, which may be visible only in individuals with unusual talent or special forms of training. Number 5. An evolutionary history and evolutionary plausibility. The roots of our current intelligences reach back millions of years in the history of the species. A specific intelligence becomes more plausible to the extent that one can locate its evolutionary antecedents, including capacities like bird song or primate social organization, that are shared with other organisms. One must also be on the lookout for specific computational abilities which appear to operate in isolation in other species but have become yoked with one another in human beings. For example, discrete aspects of musical intelligence may well appear in several species but are only joined in human beings. Number 6. support from experimental psychological tasks. Many paradigms favored in experimental psychology illuminate the operation of candidate intelligences. Using the methods of the cognitive psychologist, one can, for example, study details of linguistic or spatial processing with exemplary specificity. The relative autonomy of an intelligence can also be investigated. Experimental psychology can also help demonstrate the ways in which modular or domain-specific abilities may interact in the execution of complex tasks. Number 7. Support from psychometric findings. Outcomes of psychological experiments provide one source of information relevant to intelligences. The outcomes of standard tests, like IQ tests, provide another clue. It must be noted, however, that intelligence tests do not always test what they are claimed to test. Many tasks actually involve the use of more than their targeted ability, while many other tasks can be solved using a variety of means. For example, certain analogies or matrices may be completed by exploiting linguistic, logical, and spatial capacities. Number 8. Susceptibility to encoding in a symbol system. Much of human presentation and communication of knowledge takes place via symbol systems. Language, pictures, mathematics are but three of the symbol systems that have become important for human survival and human productivity. One of the features that makes a raw computational capacity useful and exploitable by human beings is its susceptibility to marshaling by a cultural symbol system. While it may be possible for an intelligence to proceed without its own special symbol system, a primary characteristic of human intelligence may well be its natural gravitation toward embodiment in a symbolic system. Part 2. The Theory. Keeping in mind the prerequisites and the criteria mentioned above, here are the types of intelligence my research has led to. Linguistic intelligence. Linguistic competence is the intelligence most widely shared across the human species. There are four aspects of linguistic knowledge. First, there is the ability to use language to convince other individuals of a course of action. This is the ability that political leaders and legal experts have developed to the highest degree, but that every three-year-old desirous of a second helping of cake has already begun to cultivate. Second, there is the capacity to use this tool to help one remember information, ranging from lists of possessions to rules of a game, from directions for finding one's way to procedures for operating a new machine. A third aspect of language is its role in explanation. A compelling example of this aspect can be found in the sciences. Despite the evident importance of logical mathematical reasoning and symbol systems, language remains the optimal means for conveying the basic concepts in textbooks. In addition, language supplies the metaphors that are crucial for launching and for explaining a new scientific development. Finally, there is the potential of language to explain its own activities, the ability to use language to reflect upon language. We can see intimations of this capacity in the youngest child who says, "Did you mean X or Y?" thereby directing his address or to reflect upon a prior use of language. Musical intelligence. Musical intelligence is the abilities of individuals to discern meaning and importance in sets of pitches rhythmically arranged, and also to produce such metrically arranged pitch sequences as a means of communicating with other individuals. These capacities also rely heavily on auditory oral abilities. There are several roles that musically inclined individuals can assume, ranging from the avant-garde composer who attempts to create a new idiom to the fledgling listener who is trying to make sense of nursery rhymes. There may well be a hierarchy of difficulty involved in various roles, with performing exacting more demands than listening does, and composing making more profound or at least different demands than performing. Logical mathematical intelligence. While the performing of operations upon equations will be familiar to anyone who recalls school mathematics, the use of logical reasoning in the verbal sphere needs to be distinguished from the rhetorical language that we encountered earlier. One, of course, can make logical inferences that are consistent with the common sense. The same rules of reasoning can be equally well applied, however, to apparently unrelated statements. Thus, given the assertion, "If it is winter, my name is Frederick," and the fact, "It is winter," one can infer that one's name is indeed Frederick, but that procedure does not work in reverse. Knowledge that one's name is Frederick in no way justifies the inference that it is Winter. That inference would be valid only if one had been given the assertion, "If my name is Frederick, it is Winter." Spatial intelligence. Central to spatial intelligence are the capacities to perceive the visual world accurately, to perform transformations and modifications upon one's initial perceptions, and to be able to recreate aspects of one's visual experience, even in the absence of relevant physical stimuli. One can be asked to produce forms or simply to manipulate those that have been provided. These abilities are clearly not identical. An individual may be acute, say in visual perception, while having little ability to draw, imagine, or transform an absent world. Thus, spatial intelligence emerges as an amalgam of abilities. Bodily kinesthetic intelligence. The two capacities, control of one's bodily motions and capacity to handle objects skillfully, are the cores of bodily intelligence. It is possible for these two core elements to exist separately. Dancers and swimmers develop keen mastery over the motions of their bodies, while artisans, ball players, and instrumentalists are able to manipulate objects with finesse. But in the typical case, skill in the use of the body for functional or expressive purposes tends to go hand in hand with skill in the manipulation of objects. The personal intelligence. There are two aspects of personal intelligences. Intrapersonal intelligence, which is the development of the internal aspects of a person. The core capacity at work here is access to one's own feeling life, the capacity instantly to effect discriminations among these feelings and eventually to label them, to enmesh them in symbolic codes, to draw upon them as a means of understanding and guiding one's behavior. Interpersonal intelligence, which turns outward to other individuals. The core capacity here is the ability to notice and make distinctions among other individuals and, in particular, among their moods, temperaments, motivations, and intentions. Part 3. Educating intelligences. How can our knowledge of multiple intelligences help improve the education system? Researchers believe that at each age, children exhibit a different set of interests. During infancy, the dominant activity involves emotional contact. At age 2, the child is absorbed in manipulation of objects. At age 3 to 7, role play and other kinds of symbolic activity come to the fore. During the ages of 7 to 11, the feature activity is formal study in school, and in adolescence, the youth pursues a combination of intimate personal relations and career-oriented explorations. Any educational program should keep these biases in mind. Though, of course, the specific profile of interests may differ significantly across cultures.